Welcome to Time Out with Taylor Rooks, now on the SNY.TV audio network. Before we get started, a couple things. Make sure, while you're listening to this, subscribe to Time Out with Taylor Rooks by searching for the show in the iPhone podcast app, or, I don't know, whatever people use to listen to podcasts these days. And once you've subscribed, please rate it, review it, drop anything in the boxes about the show, because the feedback is always very, very greatly appreciated. Okay, but no more of that. Today's guest is Wilson Chandler. So I started following Wilson on Twitter about 8 months or so ago, and he's different from pretty much everyone on my timeline because his tweets are almost never about sports. Never. I mean, he discusses life and race and purity and health and spirituality and all these things that I think the average person doesn't really expect a basketball player to be talking about. I mean, come on, like, he's vegan. He's a vegan basketball player. I could never even be a vegan regular human being. I mean, he's deep into books and knowledge and gaining knowledge in order to form an opinion that genuinely makes sense. He's very, like, in tune with the fact that life is bigger than basketball. And in this podcast, he talks about the plight of Black women and the mental health struggles that he and other athletes face. He really goes deep in depth into that. But he's also fun. I mean, we dive into his 80 tattoos and we play a very fun game of this game I ordered online called Black Card Revoked. It's hilarious. And yes, okay, we talk a little bit about the Melo trade he was involved in and some Denver Nuggets trade rumors. But Wilson is so much more than basketball, and so is this talk.
Wilson Chandler, thank you so much for coming onto the podcast, taking the time out to come talk to me.
Anytime. I just appreciate you having me on the show, and I look forward to it.
Well, before you get started, I have to let everybody know, you guys can't see him, but he is wearing an Allen Iverson jersey, a smooth vintage AI jersey. Tell me why you have that on.
AI's the guy, man. He's a legend, you know, from everything from the court to off the court, you know, his game, the tattoos, the fashion, his opinions, and just everything about him is legendary.
Though I am a little upset because you have long sleeves on and I needed to see all the tattoos. I hear you have like hundreds. What's the exact number of tattoos you have?
If I had to pick a number, I would say maybe between 60 and 70.
60 and 70?
Somewhere between that.
So how many hours is that getting tatted?
Lots of hours. When you listen to music and you're young and watching movies and just talking, I mean, you're lost in the hours.
Do you ever go get tattoos with any teammates or other people you've gone to get tatted with?
Yeah, I got tattoos with a lot of guys. Nate Robinson, Eddie Curry, Quentin Richardson. I think me and JR might have got a tattoo together.
Oh, was that an experience? Yeah. I want to go get tatted with a JR Smith.
Yeah. I'm not sure if we got a tattoo together, but I know one time I was getting tatted, and Eddie Curry brought him over to my house when me and him was teammates with the Knicks. Mm-hmm.
What's he like? I mean, he, to me, is one of the just most fascinating athletes ever. He has such a good personality. He's so personable. Like, he's so relatable. Like, you look at him, you just want to drink some Henny and watch basketball.
Yeah, I don't know if bro drink Henny. I don't think that's his drink of choice, but I see that a lot. Henny Palooza,
yeah,
whatever
where
the
did
jokes.
That start?
I have no idea. I think that came from his days in New York, just being out on the party scene, and I think people just start saying Henny with him. But he's a great guy, you know. Me and him have a lot in common, you know, tattoos and other things. He's the first person to introduce me to Sons of Anarchy, but like you said, he's a very
Sons of Anarchy.
Yeah, for sure.
I have not seen that. I do not think I'd like it.
No?
I'm like, The Wire is my favorite show of all time.
Yeah, I mean, that's the GOAT. So,
yeah. Sons of Anarchy, okay. I know that's a lot of tatted people on that show.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of different. It took me a while to get into it, too. But once I started watching it, it's a great show.
What other shows do you do?
I like Narcos. I'm a little bit weird, though. I can watch some gangster stuff. Or I can watch some strange stuff like Stranger Things. On Netflix, I like to Get Down on Netflix. Black Mirror is good.
So good.
Yeah, really
good.
Have
you seen every episode?
No.
Okay.
No, I just
so
got
I
into
ruin
it.
Anything.
No, not yet.
Which ones have you seen?
I just started, so I'm on the first season, so I only seen like the first three episodes.
Okay.
But it's really good though.
Okay.
The show that I haven't got into that everybody loves is Game of Thrones.
Me neither. I don't think that's my thing.
Yeah, so I'm into that, like, that type of stuff, but that show in particular, I can't get into it. It's kind of slow, it's kind of boring. I don't know, just can't get into it.
You should try Luther.
Luther, I heard that was pretty good.
That's very, very good. Yeah. Luther's good. I've done Stranger Things as well. Did you do House of Cards?
House of Cards is a show that somebody recommended I haven't watched yet, so they recommended me that and Black Mirror, so.
Yeah, and Black Mirror is amazing. Yeah. Just wait till you get to, like, the second and third season. The first season is very good, but second and third is where it kind of really starts to pop up.
And I like ATL is a great show.
Oh, my God. You know we have to wait till 2018, because Donald Glover is, like, doing a movie, so they're going on a year-long break.
That's crazy, but he did a great job with that, and I like the Night Of HBO show.
Did you like the ending?
I didn't like the ending. I don't think nobody I know liked the ending, but it was a pretty good, solid show. So.
I didn't think it was that bad. I mean, I thought it was realistic. You know, I feel like, you know, not everything has this ending that is just boom in your face.
Yeah, but I think the build-up was so crazy, you just thought something was going to happen, you know, and it didn't. So I think that was just it.
So, of course, one of the reasons I wanted you to come on the show was to talk about Black History, Black History Month, mm-hmm. Black culture, Black issues. Yeah. I know those are all things that you're very into, but there's a couple things I need to ask you before we get to that.
Yeah.
First thing, you caught a fish that was like the size of six of me.
Right.
Tell me about that experience.
It was crazy because I had just turned vegan right before I went down there. And I already committed to the show that the guy had. So I went down there just to keep my word or whatever. So I ended up catching a fish. When we first went out there, I had the fish. The first one was like maybe like 310 pounds, and it wasn't recording. So I exerted all this energy with reeling this fish in, and then he's like, "Oh my god, I wasn't recording." I'm like, "Oh shit!" So we gotta catch that fish again.
Yes, that's crazy.
So the second one that I caught was 350 pounds, and by the time I caught that one, I was super dead. But it was a Goliath grouper.
It's bigger than you. It's like
for sure.
Three of you. If it's six of me, it's like three of you.
It was one of the toughest fights ever in life.
Yeah, so how do you reel the fish in? Like, how does that work?
So, before I did it, it's a technique that you have. You have to put the reel between your legs and kind of use, like, your hamstrings and not use your back. So, you're kind of using your legs. So, it's a technique to it. And if you don't use that technique, your back will be jacked up for a couple weeks. So.
Yeah. So, you went vegan right before you had to go catch the fish.
Mm-hmm.
How long have you been a vegan?
So, I was pescatarian for about 4 or 5 months, and I went vegan for about 6.5 months. And now, since then, I've been kind of back and forth since the season has started. Kind of hard on the road, like when you're in cities like New Orleans and Memphis and stuff like that. It's kind of
you trying to get some jambalaya.
Yeah, for sure.
No, so when I was in, I think it was maybe 10th grade, I watched this documentary. It was called Meet Your Meat.
Mm-hmm.
I tried to give up meat.
Yeah.
But I only was able to give up beef and pork. I eat chicken and fish. But I don't know how somebody is able to be vegan, like eat no animal products. Like, how hard is that on a day-to-day?
It's super hard. I think once you get past the mental aspect, it's pretty easy, though. But it's hard as far as if you have a job, you travel a lot, you're in these different cities, and it's kind of hard to get vegan food. But I think the mental aspect of it is pretty easy once you get past, just like how you cut out red meat and pork and stuff like that, I think. Once you do it, I mean, after a while, it just comes second nature.
Do you think you genuinely feel better, lighter, more energy?
Yeah, for sure. You know, I had a lot of injuries, and I did pretty much every procedure you can do and treatments and stuff like that. Went to Germany. And a lot of those things worked, too, but nothing like this this new lifestyle.
Hardest thing to give up?
Tacos.
Tacos.
Yeah, tacos.
Chipotle.
Yeah, Chipotle, homemade tacos, all that.
Do you cook?
No, I'm not a big cooker. I can cook some stuff. You know, I was raised with my grandparents, and my grandma taught me how to cook, but I'm not a big cooker. I hate cooking because it takes too long.
And the cleanup, it's just not worth it.
The cleanup is the worst part, actually.
Okay, what's the best dish you've ever made?
I'm kind of low maintenance, so it had to be like some fried chicken or fried pork chops, something like that, some classic.
I'm sorry. I honestly like keep losing my train of thought because I look at your hands and they're filled with tattoos, and I know that that had to hurt.
Yeah, the hands are one of the worst spots. Just because, I mean, especially my hands, like super skinny hands and bony. Yeah. So yeah.
And what do those numbers mean?
1301 is the house I was raised in with my grandparents. Mm-hmm. That's the home address. And 21st is a street in Chicago. I met some guys out there a long time ago, and we became really good friends, and it's like my second home. So, you know, I always want to show respect to those guys.
That, I mean, it's like a work of art, yeah. All of you. Yeah. Okay, I'm going to tell you something that's so embarrassing, okay? When I was either 14 or 15, I was in high school. I wanted a tattoo. No one had one. I wanted to be cool. Yeah. I went into a garage and got two tattoos, a huge one on my neck, which I regret so much. I still have it. It's not like that bad. It's just like if I would have waited a little longer, I would have got something different.
I mean, that's everybody. I mean, I'm sure everybody who has a tattoo, who has multiple tattoos, has something, unless they started at an age where they can afford. I know when I started, my teammates was actually, one of my teammates on my team, he was a year older than me, and he was doing tattoos out of his basement. And a lot of guys wanted to get tattoos from him, but I didn't go to him. I went to this other guy who was doing tattoos at his house. So my first like 9 or 10 tattoos was like low maintenance, but sure.
Just chilling in someone's house.
Yeah. Actually, all my tattoos were by somebody like, different though. I probably didn't went to like maybe like 20 different artists. So
really?
Get sprayed.
But you just trust them to just ink you.
Not even that though, because I got a lot of tattoos that's not good at all. But I think it's just like an art for me, like, you know, just getting tattooed by different people and just showing progress from where I started to where I am now, you know, just stuff like that. Like, I got a friend, Wes Lang, who's a really big painter, and he does, like, low-ball tattoos. And I asked him for a tattoo. He's like, I'm not really that good, but I'm like, just came too many people said they got tattooed by Wes Lang, so, yeah. I mean.
I like it. Random, how many people see your name who don't know who you are and are like, okay, is his name Wilson or is his name Chandler?
That's been happening since, I mean, I can remember. I don't remember her name, but I had a teacher in elementary who used to call me Chandler, so.
Yeah. You know they say you shouldn't trust anybody with two first names.
Really? Is that
yes,
a saying?
Yes, that is a saying.
So I had to blame my either my grandma or my mom for that. And can't blame me.
It's a good name, though. It works out, but it's like, okay, I could easily see somebody thinking your first name is Chandler and then just forever calling you Chandler.
Sometimes I think I might rather go with that name than Wilson. Like, you know, kids, hey, Mr. Wilson. Kind of irritating after a while. Just call me Will.
What's your middle name?
Jamal.
Wilson Jamal Chandler. See, like, maybe you could go by Jamal. I like Wilson, though.
Yeah, my family calls me Jamal. I mean, now, at the age I am now, Wilson is, I mean, it's whatever, so.
Well, as much as I want to talk about your name and your tattoos and how many you have and how much it hurt, because I know it did, because mine hurt, and I have a baby one. It's so painful.
Yeah, it is. When people say tattoos don't hurt, I'm like, that's some bullshit. I got a lot of tattoos, and all my tattoos hurt, every single one.
See, the first step is admitting it. Yeah. You know, you were able to say, this hurt, don't do it. Okay, question. You have kids. Mm-hmm. Are they able to get tattoos? As many as you?
I think that's for them to decide at a certain age, you know, once they're grown and basically living their own life. I mean, I can't tell them not to, but I wouldn't encourage them to get it, I guess.
Yeah. All right. Well, a couple days ago, you tweeted something about the NBA, or you tweeted that Black History Month should be more than a month. And I remember during MLK Day, you had said that NBA should do more for Black History. If you could pick, I mean, what ideally would it be for you for the NBA to do for the month or for the year?
That's a tough question because I feel personally, being Black or African American, whatever you want to call it, that you know, African history is a part of us. You know, no matter what, not just a month, it's every day. You know, we kind of carry that burden. You know, and I think you know as a whole, you know, we should talk about it more. You know, because those guys, you know, they sacrificed a lot. You know, for us, for their families. You know, just. To have like equal rights, you know. So I think every day, you know, we should definitely recognize it more, not just a month, and not just on certain birthdays and stuff like that. And it's a lot of people who I feel like that we don't talk about, you know, that we could talk about, you know. We know a lot of the bigger guys, but, you know, we should study some of the other guys, you know, who've done a lot also.
How hard is it? Because, I mean, being a black woman is an experience.
Yeah.
So, quite the experience. How hard is it being a black man, I mean, in the time that we're living in right now?
It's tough, I mean, a black man, a black person in general, like you said, I think, for me, I think black women have it even rougher, you know, with social media and stuff like that, and like slut shaming, and just the way we look at women now in this lifestyle we live, it's really tough. And I think black men definitely should stand up more for our black women. And it's easier said than done. You know, we all have, you know, a past. We all done stuff we're not proud of. But I think, you know, in the future, you know, we definitely should look towards, like, you know, uplifting our black women and helping.
And what conversations, I mean, have you had with black women? What makes you, I mean, because I feel like a lot of black men don't understand why being a black woman is hard, the issues that come with it, the struggles that come with it. So just from your experience, what gives you that point of view to say they have a struggle and it's something that should be addressed?
Growing up, I was raised, you know, around a lot of women. You know, I shared a room with my aunt, which I called my sister because I was raised by my grandma. And I had situations with my mom, you know, reasons why she couldn't keep me, you know, drugs and, you know, like slut shaming and stuff like that. So I didn't have experiences, you know, where I seen women degraded a lot, you know. And when you're young, you kind of understand because you're kind of sensitive when you're a kid. But, you know, as you get older a little bit, you know, and I got drafted and stuff like that. So you kind of forget a little bit just because you live in a new lifestyle. And then as you get a little bit older, you kind of come back to this thing and just remember all those things. And seeing certain stuff on the internet and just reading about different women in power and stuff like that, and just seeing how black society is much better when we have women of empowerment, in my opinion. You know, if we have women that can lead, I mean, women are everything. It's like Mother Nature, you know. Black women is like the key to, I think, our success.
What are some of the things that you think you see online that bother you the most about maybe how black women are portrayed or the perception that comes with it?
I think just, you know, on Instagram, you know, like girls showing their body, being accepted like that. I mean, I have no problem with people doing what they want to do individually, but just the way it's accepted, you know, by women and by men, you know. And I think, you know, we should definitely be looking past that, but, I mean, it's just how it is.
I think that the thing that sometimes can come with not understanding what it's like to be a black woman is almost thinking that they have it easier because they're a woman. Yeah. But in so many different aspects, it truly is a lot harder. Yeah. I think that black women are always seen as, okay, A, a woman, B, a black woman, and then put on top of how they look, whether it's perceived as good or bad, and all of these things mesh into what I think people view as their worth. And I think that so many things can happen to you that make you feel like you're either worth less than someone or think you're worth more.
Yeah.
And I think that that gets very dangerous when black women feel like they have to pick sides and be this one type of person and look down on the other type of person. Is that how you see it?
Yeah, I definitely see it like that. And I mean, I have eyes, you know, and yeah, a lot of those women do look good, but, you know, on top of that, you got to have something else. It's just like with a basketball player, you can be a great athlete, you know, but if something happened, you lose all your money, what else do you have to fall back on? I mean, he was great, but, I mean, what else do you do? You know, how do you live, you know, after that, after basketball? So it's kind of like that, like after your looks and after your body and your features, like what else do you have? You know, do you have smarts? Do you have a degree or a skill set or something like that, or some type of connections or whatever it may be.
We're almost in such a weird time right now because it's almost like being pretty is a currency.
Yeah.
Like you can get by on life by being pretty.
Yeah.
And that's it. You can have a lot of Instagram followers and that's it. And you have a daughter, correct?
Mm-hmm.
What things do you say to her? How do you prepare her for, you know, the life that she's going to see, life she's going to be around as she gets older?
Right now, she's 8. You know, I know it's never too early to start explaining stuff like that, but I try to keep it away from social media as much as possible. As of right now, I know I'm not going to be able to do it forever. I think, you know, in the next couple of years that I have to have this conversation with her, you know, just about certain things and how, you know, the world is and just how to respect yourself and know your worth. So as of right now, you know, I just try to lead by example as much as possible, and we haven't really had that conversation yet.
How much do you think you have grown after having a daughter? They say daughter is punishment for all the bad things you've done.
That's for sure. That's definitely a true statement. I think a little bit when she was born, I grew just a tad bit, but no disrespect to my daughter and stuff like that. I think I grew more this past year when I had this last hip surgery. Because before that, even being to myself and not doing certain things, the more you still had a certain like mindset and just being trapped in that mindset. I think this past year kind of scared me when I had the hip surgery. It was my second one. And I was just thinking, like, what am I going to do besides basketball? And I was kind of, like, in this space. I didn't know what to do and where I was going to go. So I just started to read just a lot of things that I never knew about, you know, our people, or just about the world in general and just certain things, and just opened my mind to different things. And then I had an opinion on certain things that I probably never would have had an opinion on before, or just looked at it as like, that's what it is, or whatever.
What books did you read?
I read different health books on comedic science and comedic health diets and being vegan and stuff like that. I read a lot of Dr. CB notes, watched a lot of his YouTube stuff on YouTube, read a lot of stuff from Tariq Nasheed, Dr. Umar, and just stuff that I already knew about, kind of just researched it even more and not just took it for what it was, American history and African-American history and stuff like that. So just different things, different documentaries, different notes and scrolls, and a couple books, the new Jim Crow rules and mass incarceration, stuff like that.
Have you seen 13th?
I have seen 13th. It's a really good documentary, really insightful. I think everyone should watch. You know, I have a lot of friends and family that's been in and out of jail, so I think it's very insightful just to see how the system works and how it's just kind of like ongoing and keeps growing.
So you talked about the hip surgery and reading and growing through that. Just what is that? Because I think a lot of people don't understand, including myself, what it's like for an athlete's body to almost, for lack of a better word, betray them. I mean, that's what you use every day, and you can't use it, and you're like, what the hell am I about to do now? I mean, what is that kind of mental struggle like?
It definitely fucks with you mentally. It's really hard, you know, when you know you can do something in your mind and your body's not allowing you to do those certain things. Even when I wasn't out, you know, the last couple of years and I was playing, I just certain movements and every few games just feeling like shit, you know, and just thinking like, damn, like, is this the end? And, you know, this is all I know, all I ever loved, and, you know, things like that. So it definitely weighs on you mentally, definitely puts you in a place of depression and just anxiety and stuff like that, you know. And I think a lot of people really don't understand, because, like, it's hard to tell somebody on the outside looking in, you know, that an NBA player, no matter what, is not blessed and has the perfect dream job and stuff like that. So to tell a person who doesn't play in the NBA that you're stressed and stuff like that, I mean, it's hard to understand. It's like when I'm talking to, like, somebody in my family or friends, like, you make millions of dollars to play basketball. Like, life is great, you know what I mean? Which it is. Not taking that for granted at all, but, you know, everything comes with a price.
Yeah,
money's definitely not the answer to a lot of things, so.
So what do you think, or how do you, I guess, I don't know if the question is deal with that, but I think there is this idea that when you do something like play in the NBA, you have no problems, because you have money and people know you and you're famous and all that stuff. But sometimes that is a bigger problem than not. Wouldn't you agree?
Yeah, for sure. You know, when you blessed and you're able to take care of a lot of people, you know what I mean? You had the means to take care of a lot of people. I mean, that weighs on you. Like I said, the injuries weigh on you. You know, that's the only thing that you know, and you don't have really backup plans. You don't know the future, the outcome of the future. I think a lot of different things weigh on you, and money is definitely a thing. If you let it, can definitely weigh on you and kind of distract, you know, what's important in life.
Do you think that depression in athletes or that mental state in athletes is something that should be talked about more, something that's maybe a little ignored?
Yeah, I definitely think it should be talked about more, but I think athletes in general have to be more open and willing to talk about it, or not even talk about it, because you can do whatever you want to do in your own life, but I think be willing to get help, you know, and at least talk to somebody and see if they have mental issues and certain things. And then you might not be crazy or shit like that, but, you know, you might just need to let it out. You might have some type of depression or anxiety and stuff like that. And I think that's big in Black communities too. Like, people never, like, go get checked for stuff like that, or even willing to get checked for stuff like that.
Because we just think we can fix it.
Yeah, we always, I mean, we, as people, we're strong, you know, we've been through a lot, you know, so I think a lot of people like, I've been through this, I can get through this, you know, there's nothing, so.
But, and that's the thing, I mean, how do you overcome that? Because that happens with a lot of things, how there's almost this perception that Black people can't be gay, you know, Black men can't be gay, Black women can't be lesbians, Black men have to have this beacon of masculinity at all times, they have to be strong, they have to be the providers. I mean, it's a lot on one person. I don't know how you would overcome those stigmas.
I think it's tough, you know. I don't have an answer for that, and I'm always kind of in between on different topics, lesbians and being homosexual and stuff like that. I had an uncle who's homosexual, so I never had a really opinion on it, because I kind of grew up with that, so I never really even thought about it like the way other people think about it, because it's kind of close to home or whatever. And I know girls growing up that were lesbian, so just, I mean, different things like that. I mean, I think it's to each his own, you know. I mean, as long as you're like a good person, I think that's all that matters.
I think that's how everyone should look at it. I mean, it's like, if it doesn't affect you and these people are happy, I think if everybody wanted everybody else to be happy, the world would be such a better place. And I think that's the issue right now, is everyone is getting so caught up, and as they should. I mean, Trump is scary. I mean, I'm not taking that away from it, but there's just all this animosity because everybody wants to be right. And granted, to me, there is clearly a wrong side and there's clearly a right side. But I don't know how we will find a common ground or like a common peace until it goes beyond politics and everybody says, okay, I just want to make the next person happy, if that makes sense.
Definitely. I think, you know, happiness is definitely one of the keys to success, you know, especially for, you know, what our people need. And like you said, finding a common ground is definitely definitely a huge part of that. And I don't know how we can find a common ground. Like you said, in this day and age, everyone wants to be right. So, you know, I think if we all just took time just to hear each other out and not be so opinionated on every single subject. And like you said, I mean, Trump, you know, the situation that's going on with him, a lot of stuff is not good. But we have to find some type of way, like, to look past that and come together as a whole, as people, first, you know, and get that right first before we can do anything about that.
How beautiful was it to see the Women's March? I loved that day.
Yeah, it's amazing. It's going to go down in history just like what Martin Luther King did, any other significant period of time, you know. And I think, you know, everybody should support that, you know, support women's rights, you know. And that's, like I said earlier, it's a big key to this nation, so.
All right, so we're talking about our people a lot, and I have this game, okay? I bought it online. It's so fun. It's called Black Card Revoked. Have you ever heard of it?
No.
Okay, so they ask, like, random questions, but it's like you say your answer. You usually play in a big group, and then the majority answer usually wins, but some of them have, like, factual answers. Okay. But I pulled some for you,
all right,
and we are going to see how you do. You ready?
Yeah, I'm ready.
Who has the better biscuit? Popeyes, Red Lobster, KFC, or Church's?
Oh, man. I think I'm going to have to say hands down Red Lobster.
What? It's Popeyes. Okay, this is my thing. Red Lobster, it's a cheddar biscuit, whereas like Popeyes, KFC, and Church's, those are the same type of biscuit.
Yeah, true. You got a point. I would say Popeyes is a close second, especially with the honey.
Okay. Yeah. That answer's acceptable. Okay, next one. In Paid in Full, where did Ace work while dealing drugs?
He worked at the cleaners.
I didn't even give you the multiple choice. You knew it.
Yeah, that's. I don't even need to hear nothing else. The cleaners, man.
Okay, you're doing well so far. What did LL Cool J want his around the way girl to have? A, diamond earrings. B, extensions in her hair. C, a Chanel bag. Or D, a big butt.
Man, in his mind, he probably wanted all, but I think he was extensions in the hair.
Yes, and the bamboo earrings. Yeah, I'm like, he better not say diamond earrings. It's bamboo.
Bamboo for sure.
Okay, two more. In Bonnie and Clyde, young Hove told Bay to look for him where? A, in the studio. B, cruising the West Side Highway. C, at Ty Ty's house. Or D, in the Marcy Project.
That was some funny answers. Cruising the West Side Highway, yes. For sure.
Okay. But he went double platinum with no features. Who?
I mean, that's a couple of people, though. Because I think Nas did it first.
Okay.
And then J. Cole.
Yes. Yeah. Look at you. I think there's one more that I, like, accidentally dropped with it. Okay, this last one. What does it mean if someone has booking info on Instagram? A, they're selling hair. B, they don't have a real job. C, they're a relationship guru. Or D, they can help you turn $50 into
$500. I don't really want to discredit nobody. But
you just pick a random one.
But, you know, I was told if somebody had booking info, they don't have a real job. I was told that. I don't know.
But shout out to everyone that has a real job that has booking info, because we don't know. You could totally have a real job. No, honestly, you should buy this game. It's so fun. They have, each edition comes with, 80 cards, I think. This is a new one. They have an old one and a new one, and it's fun to play in big groups. You should totally buy it. All right, so real quick. Obviously, I cannot let you go without asking you some basketball questions. How's the season going so far? How you feeling?
I'm feeling pretty good. I think it's a good season so far. You know, for us, it's kind of up and down. But I think as of late, you know, we kind of find hitting our stride, you know, and we moved up to the eighth seed in the West. So I think we just got to keep building on it. But overall, I think it's a pretty good season.
How interesting is it? Because obviously you were involved in, the whole Melo trade. Mm-hmm. So when you see what's going on right now in New York, there's a different Melo trade rumor every day. Yeah. I mean, just what are your initial thoughts when you turn on the TV and see it?
That's what you get, Melo. No, I'm just like, I like Melo. I'm a big fan of Melo.
He's joking.
Always been a big fan of Melo's, but I mean, that's New York for you. You know, you got to kind of be on your A game 24/7. You know, they eat you alive, man. That media is crazy. The fans are crazy. Not in a good way. Not in a bad way, in a good way. But, you know, it's the mecca of basketball, and they expect the world from everybody, whether it's fair or not.
I mean, I get being frustrated with Melo and some fans not wanting him in New York, whatever that may be. But for me, everything he's done for New York, I think the boos are a little disrespectful.
Yeah, definitely. You know, Melo's done a lot, you know, in the communities, you know, off the court, and he's done a lot for basketball. So I think the boos are definitely out of hand, if I should say so myself.
If you were the GM of the Knicks during your trade, would you have made the trade?
No, I wouldn't have made the trade. I would have told Melo and his agent if he really wanted to come to New York and he really wanted to be in New York and that's what his heart was, that he can wait till the summer and we can sign him as a free agent.
So what do you think, and obviously I know you have no inside information on this, but what do you think is going to happen with Melo? You think he'll end up staying? You think that he'll waive the no trade clause?
I think the right situation where he can contend for a ring, I think he'll waive it. If it's just to get to another team, I don't think he will. I think he's a pretty strong person, and I think, you know, he has a lot of ties over there in New York. So I don't think he'll just waive it just for any situation. But if it's something that can get him to the finals and potentially get him a ring, I think he will.
And there's obviously lots of trade rumors swirling around you right now. How do you deal with that in season? Hey, I know you know that February 23rd is coming up quick.
I mean, just like when I was in New York, you just keep playing, you know, no matter what, you just always keep playing. You know, we get paid to be professionals in this game. We get paid a lot of money to do our job. So you just keep playing and you play through it.
Totally unrelated question. You play with Tracy McGrady at one point.
Yeah.
I love Tracy McGrady. Just tell me about the experience.
he's another GOAT for me, you know, in my era growing up. You know, I remember when we first got him, it's just like, even though he wasn't a T-Mac of old, he just watched him. I mean, I just watched him, just watched his mannerisms, how he walked, just how he carried himself. I was just in awe of him, you know, being that guy I watched when he was in Orlando and in Toronto. It was an amazing experience.
You're almost infamously known for, you know, the lockout when you were playing. I don't even know how to pronounce the – what is the name of the Z? It begins with a Z. How do you say it?
It was Guangsha. It was a team. I was in the city of Hangzhou, but it was Guangsha.
Gotcha. What was that like, first up?
It was pretty good. You know, I had some great times, you know, and I got a little homesick over there. But it was great. You know, I met a lot of good people. You know, my teammates were great. The ownership was great. My translator, who held me around the whole time I was there, was amazing. And I went to a lot of great cities and seen a lot of good stuff. So, I mean, I had a good time just experiencing the culture over there.
And what did you learn from the lockout, A, and B, could you envision another lockout?
Yeah, you always got to be prepared for a lockout, and I think it can happen anytime. And I just learned you always got to have a backup plan, you know, and I just went over there. You know, that was my backup plan at the time.
All right, so I'll let you end with, like I said, obviously a lot of rumors going on about you being traded, whatever that may be. Tell the fans, tell the NBA, tell whoever listening, just almost your side of things, what you think you bring to a team and what your end goal is in the league.
I think I just bring, you know, kind of like a little bit of everything. You know, I'm not really great at one specific thing. I think I can do a lot of different things really good. And I think I can fit in with a lot of different players, whether it be superstars or other role players. And I think whatever the team really needs, defense, some scoring, I'm just going to be there just to kind of help the team win.
Any more tattoos coming?
Yeah, for sure. Always thinking about tattoos. Yeah, so I don't know what exactly, but I think I'm getting some tattoos definitely in the near future.
Thank you so much for taking the time, Allison. Or Chandler, or Jamal.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Another huge thank you to Wilson Chandler for taking the time out to come onto the show. His words about athletes facing depression, but it being ignored because of, you know, the glamour that comes with it will always stick with me. I hope we don't continue to let our image of people, you know, cloud their truth. And I hope that what he said inspires all of us to have tough but necessary conversations about things that maybe make us a little uncomfortable. I hope that you enjoyed it. Make sure to subscribe to Time Out with Taylor Rooks by searching for the show in the iPhone podcast app, or like I said, wherever you use to listen to your podcast. When you subscribe, rate, review, I read them all. I would love it. I'm really excited about the guests that I have lined up, so please stay tuned to the feed for more episodes in the near future. Thanks for listening to Time Out with Taylor Rooks, and I will see you in the next one.